Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show.
These eyes cry every night for you. These arms long to hold you.
And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our journey today by looking at health and healing. First comes a study that should concern everyone because it has a very positive outcome. And it's simply this. Think of all the people in Florida, Arizona, Nevada, Texas, California, states where you get a lot of sunlight. Well, you're more susceptible to different types of cancer. And here from the University of Eastern Finland comes a study that you're less likely to develop the deadly melanoma if you take vitamin D3. That's correct. Fewer cases of melanoma were observed among regular users of vitamin D3 supplements than non-users. They looked at 500 people who were susceptible to skin cancers. Skin cancers, you're talking about basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, and melanoma. And they were tested at the Kuopio University Hospital. What they found was simple. If you wanted less skin cancer, make sure you're getting your vitamin D3. It's that simple. Now, of course, we know vitamin D3 is important for our immune system. It helps us if we have colds or flu. But this is just one new finding. So we all want to have healthier skin. This helps do that. Another study up. And this is the University of Otago, which is in New Zealand. Diabetics, pre-diabetics, and that's about more or less 100 million people in the United States. Please pay attention to vitamin C. Research reported in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients show that low intake and serum levels of vitamin C may be particularly risky for adults with diabetes. The study analyzed 25,000 men and 26,000 women who participated in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey over a period of 19 years. And what they found is that there was type 1 diabetics, type 2 diabetics, and at the beginning of the study, 38% of the people had an intake of vitamin C that was below the estimated average, and it worsened to 46%. Which means nearly half the people had less vitamin C than what their body required. Individuals whose intake of vitamin C was lower than what was recommended had a 20% higher risk of type 2 diabetes compared with an intake over what people should be taking. Now, these studies are using standards that I feel are grossly understated. Just ask any physician who uses vitamin C supplements either in oral form or in intravenous form in their practice, and they'll tell you. They believe the average American, because their faulty diet, not having enough fruits and vegetables and antioxidants and fresh juices, like a fresh orange juice, are not suffering from classical scurvy, but are suffering from subclinical scurvy. And they see that in bleeding gums, loose teeth, and damaged skin, aging prematurely, and loss of collagen in the skin, which holds your skin tight, and therefore less vitamin C and less quercetin, then the skin begins to sag. You get that jowly, baggy look. And also you're more susceptible to colds and flu, and your immune system is substantially compromised. You're more susceptible to cancer. So just think of how many people you know who may be obese. We got 20 million to 30 million children who are obese, and that's just a crime. We should never allow that to happen. And then people are told, well, don't worry about supplements. Yes, concern yourself with supplements. I'll give you a little example of how misled you have been about the importance of supplements in your diet. At the very beginning of my career, I was only 21, and I had a chance to meet a man named Clinton Miller. Clinton Miller had been for a long time the voice of the National Health Federation. That was the one body in America that kind of challenged the FDA and medical doctors about them being overly, let's say, pessimistic about natural and healthy lifestyles. And so at that time, the average American, the average physician, remember, they smoked, they drank. They had ads in the Journal of the American Medical Association. I collected the ads. I put them in my documentaries showing doctors recommended you smoke Lucky Strikes or Camels or Chesterfields, and always with the idea it was good for you. It would calm you down and you would feel better. You would breathe better. Of course, everything was just the opposite. Now, you just have to ask yourself, how many people died of emphysema, heart attacks, or lung cancer because they trusted their doctor till death? And it was not until all seven of the top chiefs of major tobacco companies lied under oath, because they all said that there is nothing that they are aware of in cigarettes that can cause addiction or cancer. And because of that, up to that point, I'm not aware of any lawsuits that have been won by plaintiffs. So as a result, people just didn't sue the tobacco companies anymore because, well, it was scientifically proven there was no connection between your smoking and a disease. Until whistleblower came forward and says, no, they've known all along, as has the FDA, as has the government known, that it does cause addiction and it does cause cancer. And then they had to compensate the state Medicaid boards for all the money that was spent at the state level for people who had diseases because of smoking. But people didn't stop smoking, and they didn't ban tobacco. Just had to put a black box warning. Now, why do I give you that? Because when I came into the field of health, first as a registered dietitian, then as a nutritionist, then as a board-certified nutritionist, then as a PhD, a clinician in human nutrition and public health science, and then as a research scientist, junior, then a main, and then a research fellow, then senior research fellow, because my work, over 160 experiments at the Institute of Applied Biology, I began to see that everything we were told about health was wrong. I mean, just the opposite of what it should be. Remember when you're told margarine protects your heart and get rid of the eggs and other things that are causing elevated cholesterol? Well, they were wrong about everything. They were wrong about the amount of fiber we should have in our diet. 5 milligrams of fiber, or 5 grams of fiber, was considered a lot of fiber. No, it wasn't. 35 to 45 milligrams of fiber is how much you should have a day. So in other words, we were suffering a lot of diseases that were completely preventable if we had honest people administering different health agencies of government and in industry, but we didn't. So there was an effort to ban all vitamins. And this was in the mid to late 1980s. And Clinton Miller came to me from the National Health Federation, and he said, Gary, you're a scientist, you're a nutritionist. Can you find us scientific articles that we can use and go before Congress and try to stop or change this legislation? Because they're saying your vitamin is a drug. It isn't. And yet that was the game Big Pharma was playing. Because then if you had a need for a vitamin, you would have to first get a prescription from your doctor, and then you'd pay an outrageous amount to get a vitamin, but the vitamin would be made by the big pharma, not your vitamin companies. So to my surprise, when I looked in the Library of Medicine, and I just did it in alphabetical order, vitamin A, B1, B2, B6, folic acid, choline, inositol, pantothenic acid, etc., B12, I found not a few articles in the peer-reviewed literature in the Library of Medicine. I found hundreds of thousands. Vitamin C alone had about 40,000 articles at that time on its chemistry, its usage, its potencies, and And I was just overwhelmed. So I collected all these, over 500,000 articles, and we gave it to him, and then we gave it to a representative going overseas where they were trying to ban worldwide, ban vitamins, what was called Codex Alimentarius. And the idea is, with that, you unify everything, meaning so if Norway allows you to have 1 milligram of vitamin B1 and 2 and 6, then every country in the world had to have 1 milligram. And that's what they were trying to do. It was a brilliant program. Big Pharma was behind it all, and corrupt politicians. So we made a presentation, and I asked, could I speak before their committee, qualified in my scientific background, but more importantly, I had data they didn't know existed, that the FDA said didn't exist, and yet it was in the National Library of Medicine. So then we went on a tour around the United States to almost 59 cities where I debated people on, should you legislate supplements? And we won. And it was called the DeShays Amendment. So that stopped Big Pharma and the FDA from putting your supplements at tiny doses, 60 milligrams of vitamin C, when if you want to stay healthy, you have to have about 1,000 milligrams a day, minimal. And then you have to have the right type because it's not all absorbed the same. And you should be able to get it from your food and as well as proper supplementation. And that's where we've been ever since. And we've been finding more and more supplements like L-carnitine, L-carnosine, NAD, PQQ, etc., are extremely beneficial for slowing down the aging process. And this is not based upon commercial exploitation of an idea to a vulnerable public. This is good quality science. Right now, there's probably 200,000 or more scientists in the United States who are studying the aging process and what can cause the stem cells to stay longer in the body and to rejuvenate so we maintain our youth longer. And there's research in telomeres research, and I'm a part of that. In fact, I've done 5 studies recently, and I'm now about to start the 6th. And yet, right now, there's another effort to ban vitamins. By this Senator Durbin. And then just check the pharmaceutical company connections and lobbying and the money given to his campaigns. It's always been this way with Congress. They've been captured by Big Pharma. And that's why we still see high prices for drugs, drugs that have not shown efficacy or safety, and yet nothing happens to them. So once again, when it comes to consuming vitamin C, if we were told the truth, and if scientists who would work with vitamin C were allowed to come forward on platforms and say, here's what we know about your vitamin C each day. Did you ever notice that you've got little splotchy blue veins in your ankles, feet, and varicosities, bleeding gums, etc.? Do you find yourself coming down with 1 or 2 or 3 colds or flu per year? Well, you're probably deficient in vitamin C. And here's a simple, inexpensive test you can take to determine how much you have in the cells and in your blood. Oh, and by the way, just one of the hundreds of different things vitamin C does, it traps free radicals and neutralizes them, and it loops many, many times through your body. But in trapping free radicals, the free radicals then cannot turn on inflammation in your joints. That helps you if you have arthritis or bursitis or any of the inflammatory conditions like cancer. It can help turn it off. Now, if you take that vitamin C with lemon juice, it makes your blood slightly alkaline, and that can turn off a lot of acidosis, meaning a highly acidic body that is far more susceptible to pain and inflammation. Oh, and it also stimulates your natural killer cells. Those are the cells that 24/7 are going through your body, finding cancer cells, engulfing them, and through a process called phagocytosis, dissolving them. Oh, and all those free radicals they're trapping can help your cells not be damaged, which means that the 10,000 gene alterations per cell per day are substantially negated, meaning your cells less likely to die earlier. through senescence, programmed cell death. And there are 100 other things vitamin C does. So, what if we knew that? How many people then might be taking the right amount of vitamin C in from good sources? How many people might start having fresh squeezed orange juice each day? Use the juice of, let's say, 5 oranges to make a 12 to 16 ounce glass of juice, depending upon the oranges, because not all oranges give you a lot of juice. And then each day, throw in a juice from a lemon on top of that, and a juice from a grapefruit on top of that, and you've got a super good drink in the morning. Now, if each orange gives you about 60 to 90 milligrams of vitamin C, then right off the bat, your one glass of juice in the morning is giving you somewhere around 500 to 600 milligrams to start the day. That's a good start. Now, if you're sick, you might need a lot more. In fact, at the Institute of Applied Biology, where thousands of you came, and so many of you had your diseases reversed completely, including terminal diseases, we had the best results of any place I know of in the United States of reversing AIDS. In fact, we were the only place in the world. And I go on the record with this. And we have absolute proof of it. I'd love to see Fauci or someone come and debate me on this issue, because we had the patients. We had their medical records. We have all their blood chemistries. We have a whole team, 22 medical team, all board certified and top of their field, all willing to testify because they were the ones giving the treatment for my protocols over a 15-year period, 1,200 of them, not one died. 18, it went on an advanced protocol with high-dose vitamin C because that was the key. No one in American history had ever used 200,000 milligrams of vitamin C intravenous. We did. It changed the course of cancer and Epstein-Barr virus, human herpes 6, and AIDS, HIV. In fact, Linus Pauling and the head of Dr. Pauling's institute, Dr. Jawala, we filmed him showing that quercetin by itself could destroy the HIV virus by itself. And vitamin C also destroyed it. All you have to do is get the right doses. And so we were titering them and doing their blood workups on a regular basis. And people just got better and better. And I'm talking about from death. I mean, they came in, they were near death. And 16 to 18 months later, vitally healthy. So, talk about being important, and yet none of this information is shared with the average person. Why? Well, let's just throw this out. If you can help prevent a disease, how does that benefit the medical industrial complex, your local hospital, your local physicians? It doesn't. The money is not in prevention, the money is in treatment. So, challenge everything you hear by the naysayers, you know, those very highly paid people that are so-called experts, and they never tell you about how conflicted these people are in their backgrounds. And they go on television and say, you don't need vitamin C, you know, once in a while have an orange. Yeah, you do need vitamin C, and these people, unfortunately, are compromised. So remember, if you're a diabetic, you really need vitamin C. You also need exercise. You need a plant-based diet. You need to know which foods cause an increase in the glucose levels. From Ohio State University comes a study about feeling depressed. Yeah, a lot of people are, and for pretty good reason today. Well, performing acts of kindness can help. I shared a story recently with you about the efforts to be kind to people and how you benefited from it. Well, this is a separate study. People suffering from symptoms of depression or anxiety may help heal themselves by doing good deeds for others. The study found that performing acts of kindness led to improvements not seen in two other therapeutic techniques used to treat depression or anxiety. Most importantly, the acts of kindness was the only intervention tested that helped people feel more connected to others. That's important. Here's what Dr. David Craig, the director of the study, said. It says, social connection is one of the ingredients of life most strongly associated with well-being. Performing acts of kindness seems to be one of the best ways to promote those connections. I would agree. The research also revealed why performing acts of kindness work so well. It helped people take their minds off their own depression and anxiety symptoms. This finding suggests that one's intuition and that people use, hopefully, can help them overcome their depression. Why? According to the study, they say that we often think that people with depression have enough to deal with, so we don't want to burden them by asking them to help others. But these results run contrary to that. Doing nice things for people and focusing on the needs of others may actually help people with depression and anxiety feel better about themselves. I think we all have seen that that is true in our life. We don't need a scientific study to tell us that kindness towards others, caring about others, caring about your community, caring about your family, even if there's, you know, parts of your family that are really, as we all have had, you know, somehow, it didn't make it up to the level of, wow, I'm glad that we all learned this. It's generally, what happened to Bob, Bill, Susan? Why'd they do that? Say that. So what? Once again, acts of kindness can connect you with solutions to a problem. We're going to take a break because we have a lot more to share with you. But on Mondays, if you go to GaryNoll.com and subscribe free to that Monday newsletter, you'll get this. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we also have a newsletter with a lot more information in it. And there's a very tiny cost for that. But at least you know where you can go to get quality information. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. Now, in order to look at the world in which we live today and see what's changing and why and who's responsible and what we can do about it so that our lives are not adversely affected as well as our neighbors, I'm showing a series of different clips, generally rather short clips, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 7 minutes. And this is Dr. Drew. I'm sure you're all familiar with him. And he is doing something the mainstream media has refused to do. He is interviewing a virologist from China who studied and worked and trained and did original research in Hong Kong for a long time. And then she started to see something was terribly wrong about the coronavirus. She wrote a paper on it, and her boss, the head of the department, says, don't do anything more or you'll cross a red line and they'll disappear you. And she said, why? And the person said, because the Chinese government does not allow anything that casts them in a negative light to come to the fore. They want to control everything. And so they will be merciless with you. Well, she continued to do research, and based upon her research and the contacts she had in Wuhan, she's Chinese, she found that this was a weaponized virus, meaning it wasn't just a gain-of-function research in a benevolent way, it was a gain-of-function research in as a biological weapon that the Chinese had developed through a different department, a Department of Defense that has never been brought up. Yet they published papers on the weaponization. They had 100 PhDs working in this one department in Wuhan to weaponize these viruses. Now, here's the sad part of this. The United States and Anthony Fauci and U.S. Public Health Service paid for that research. And we have a paper trail. We've been able, in the last year through Freedom of Information Acts, to get the actual documents, to get the articles that were originally published and scrubbed from their sites, all sites, about the outcome. They intentionally wanted to make this a biological weapon. The Chinese did. Now, what we do not know is, was this released by accident? And then it began to become very infective. So they had to put up that wall. It came from, you know, the fresh animal meat market. No, it did not. But they organized a whole effort to try to convince the world by having a group of leading scientists publish an article in The Lancet, the British medical journal, that this could not have come from a laboratory. But at the same time, they were also in their emails saying that this came from a laboratory. And so then they went to the defense of the Chinese government, and they had Peter Daszak, who was getting the money from Anthony Fauci, and then putting it into University of North Carolina, put it into a study center in Canada, in Toronto. They were doing research in the same area, and they were all working together with Wuhan. Let me just summarize what we know now. We know that it wasn't the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease or the CDC or the FDA or U.S. Public Health Service that created the whole protocols. It was the Defense Department, brand new information that we shared with you on yesterday's program. But what this woman scientist was saying, that she, in her own original research, in an article that was published, showed that this was weaponized. This was not benevolent gain-of-function research. This was deadly. And it's difficult to understand what she's saying, but I'm giving you the summary of it. Not a single major media in the United States, nor any member of Congress, invited her to testify, give this evidence, because she has the evidence that the Chinese Department of Defense, their Defense Department, much like our Defense Department, sponsored with 100 scientists at its own laboratory, also in Wuhan, and working with the Wuhan lab that's there in virology, the weaponized version. All those records have been deleted, scrubbed. Chinese government has blocked all investigations, and they're not giving any information and cooperating at all. The World Health Organization then jumped in to defend the Chinese government. Wonder why? Could it be because Tedros, who has no background in public health science, he's not a medical doctor, he was really put there at the behest of the Chinese government. So he goes into cover for him. And guess who they select to run the committee that goes in to investigate, to put all this to rest? Peter Daszak, the very man who has conflict of interest in this and who should be brought before Congress and testify. But definitely this woman should be brought to testify. So I suggest that if you care about getting to the truth about who created this virus, why, and where, then ask your legislator to ask this woman on Dr. Drew to be brought in and put under oath and show all of her research, which she says she has. She smuggled it out of China. So that this is someone who is at the scene and give us better insights. All right? That's what you're going to see now in this short interview. But it's difficult to understand her. I'm just summarizing a lot of what she says.
Okay, I was trained as a medical doctor in China from two top medical universities. And then because I want to do research, so I moved to the University of Hong Kong to pursue the research. And since I stay in Hong Kong, in the last 5 years before I came to the United States, I moved into the virology lab that is a WHO reference lab, also the State K Emerging Infectious Disease Lab. So I was trained there as a postdoc, also as a virologist, and my focus is on immunology and vaccines.
And what kind of projects, were there any projects underway that concerned you while you were there?
When I was there, I usually do the influenza vaccine development. I own my own vaccine patent, which is pending in the United States. And also before I leave, because that was there was over 3 months of the outbreak at that time. I leave on in April of 2020. So before that, I also published two COVID-19 virus research, and then one is published on Lancet Infectious Disease, which tell people the viral load can predict the severity of the disease. And also the second one is, I'm the co-author of Nature magazine, and that is the first article to tell people the high transmissibility and using the proper animal model hamster.
High transmissibility of COVID-19 or just of coronavirus generally? You were working with COVID-19 something called virus. COVID-19?
Exactly. That's yeah. COVID-2 because we got the SARS-CoV-2 virus isolated and also amplified in our lab since end of January 2020. After that, we use it to do a lot of experiment in the ESL3 lab and then publish that is one of my paper. And since I left the CRG, removed my from other articles.
And what was the intent of your research? What was your sort of, why were you going down that path? What was that? What problem was that going to solve in your mind?
Do you mean the investigation of COVID or you mean the whole my research background?
The COVID.
What do you mean? The COVID. Actually, when I started COVID, that is the secret investigation, the confidential investigation, which is not as published as I told. So as back to 31st December 2019, I was asked by my supervisor, WHO expert, Prof. Liu Peng in the University of Hong Kong, to do the research based on my own network in mainland China about the novel coronavirus in Wuhan. And I used my own network involving the laboratories, hospitals, and even the military labs to show that actually the thing is getting worse and worse in China. And the government was hiding the facts. And after that, the thing got changed because first I was warned not to tell anything, to keep silent. If not, I will be disappeared if I cross the red line. And also I see the WHO experts, my boss and my big boss, Malik Peiris, all of them, although they have, this is their responsibility in the reference lab, to tell the report the situation to WHO for the region of the public health crisis and within 24 hours. However, they all turned to help China to cover it up. So that's why based on my investigation, when I get more and more stunning evidence, I can't wait. And finally, I decided to deliver this message to a famous anti-CCP YouTube blogger based in New York, who speak in Chinese. I let him to release this information to warn China to stop it, to control the things as soon as possible. And that's basically the beginning of my story.
And so who was the individual that came to you and said, you're going to be disappeared if you talk? That's another doctor at the hospital, or that's a virology lab director. And why is he, who is giving him that directive? Who's telling him that?
He didn't tell me who gave him, but I'm sure that comes from his experience. So he is my boss. Actually, I respect him very much when I was in Hong Kong U. I worked with him for 5 years. Dr. Liu Peng, he's still the very famous WHO expert because of his work, his achievement, even from SARS-1 period back to 2003. And when he told me that you have to keep silence, and I asked him, why do you want me to do that? And he said, because China government won't let any of us, he means Hong Kong experts, to know the fact, and you only can know the things from official sources. And he also added that, I don't want it would be like what happened during SARS-1. And later when I report him the things, I remember he also told me, oh, come on, they did the same thing as what they have done in SARS-1. So, you know, in SARS-1, they cover it up.
But what I had summarized is what she said. So, yes, and this the same time that Anthony Fauci is saying there was no funding. And indeed there was, and now documents have established that it was funded all along. For years, we were funding gain-of-function research. Why has there been no committee hearing with Fauci and all the others, Peter Daszak and and the others from the University of North Carolina who funded this research, did this research. Shouldn't there be? And why did they put at least 23 labs, biological labs, to do this kind of secret research on weaponizing germs in Ukraine? And how many more of these labs are there around the world? We won't know that. That's unfortunate. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to share a different point of view. It's my personal and subjective point of view. I'd like you to call in and share your thoughts on it. The other day I presented an article on woke, and it's my very firm belief, with lots of research to back it up that I'll be sharing with you, that wokeism and identity politics and all the other, let's say, weaponizing of words and thoughts is now almost permanently into the American culture. For example, I just saw, and I won't play it today, but in an upcoming program, the commencement address at the Wisconsin Medical School, all of the graduates had to take an oath to wokeism. Literally an oath to wokeism, not the Hippocratic Oath. What do you think that's going to mean when a person goes out to practice an internship and residency and is making decisions through the mindset, the indoctrination, the inculcation of wokeism? This is happening in almost every university and college in the United States. But here's what we're not discussing. And first, let me just remind people of some of the things I said to give you a little backdrop. Our liberal intelligentsia self-flagellates itself and cowers to the absurd demands of wokeism's aggressive and, I believe, degenerate national moral thinking. The collateral damage has been the demolition of whatever remains of former national moral structure that once upheld universal humanitarianism, universal spiritual values, universal conciliation and cooperation. Because throughout all history and all cultures, there have been moments in time where people in power enslaved people. It wasn't because of the color of their skin. They had won over whole countries. Think of Genghis Khan. And when they won over countries, those people, in effect, became slaves. And then they used these people. They were all second-type citizens and almost crossed the board. But over time, there were those who stood up and called this out. Frequently, they were made heretics, and they were martyred because they're speaking truth. Not all were killed, but many were ostracized. Think of Newton. Think of Galileo. Think of Einstein. I mean, Voltaire, Maimonides, Spinoza. There are thousands that have spoken truth to power, but they did not have a foundation or group support to go out to challenge. They did it alone, which is really hard to imagine how they withstood all the deprivations and attacks that came against them. But it's as if today we have learned nothing from history. We have not matured, we have not gained, we have not grown. So let's just say 1 million people never commit a crime living in a state, but 1% do. Do you judge the total character of 1 million based upon the crimes of 1,000? I would hope not. Right now in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and other places, they're committing crimes that they no longer consider crimes, like shoplifting. In fact, right now, and I knew it was going to come, gangs have taken over virtually the whole homeless encampments. They supply the drugs. They charge rent for living on the street to these people. If you don't pay it, you get beat up and someone takes your place. And yet this is never discussed. And also, how did these people get on the streets? They're not all drug addicts or alcoholics or mentally ill. In fact, that's not the majority. But we won't have that conversation because it'll show a failure of the way that we live in our society, in a class-based society. Those with lower classes have no value. As Dr. Harari of World Economic Forum says, you're worthless and you're useless, except he expands that to the entire working class and much of the professional class as well. So they have no value. So if you have no value, and then you're considered an inconvenience to everyone else who has a value, who's paid big rent and big money to live in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and now you're defecating and urinating in front of their building, you're going into the stores that they once went into to get their drug stores, their medications, or supermarkets to get their food, or clothing stores or boutiques. And now the gangs are there, and they hand a person a basket, and they say, a shopping cart, and they say, we're going to go on with you. One of us will go in with you, and we'll tell you, here's a list of what to buy, because this is what we can resell on the street. And so the homeless person goes in, and the person's saying, get this, 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 and this. Okay, and they add it up. You got $950. Let's leave the store. The security person can't touch the person. If they do, that person, the store owner or their employees or security person will be arrested. The person stealing, the person evading this will not be. Talk about a warp, but that's wokeism. That's wokeism that says defund the cops. Oh, they tried that. They actually did that. And in Minnesota, how did that work out? When the very community that said, we don't want the police, then became the target of all of the violence and theft, where it was no longer safe for a person living there to go out on the street. Oh, now we want our police. And the champions of no more funding the police are the people who have all the armed bodyguards, like the mayor of Chicago, etc. So wokeism caused that. It's one of the primary elements, because the average person is not going to steal. The average person will protest and protest vigorously what they believe is wrong, and they should have that right. But then within that group of people protesting, there'll be the opportunist, the social parasites. They will be the ones breaking store windows, going in and vandalizing and stealing everything they can. Yet they're not to be arrested. They're not to be there to be forgiven. After all, it's their right. No. And the average person, even walking by a store window that had been open and they could reach in and steal something, will not steal it, because they have moral fiber. They have character, something that American of all cultural backgrounds, all ethnicities, prided themselves in with. We don't steal. We don't kill. We don't fight. We don't arm. We don't stab. We don't push people on subway tracks. We don't slash people's throats. We don't bust people in the head with a sucker punch. But today, one small group has taken advantage of wokeism's open-door policy. One guy in New York had done over 100 arrests for shoplifting. No one said, what's it mean to be a small business person where you're afraid to open your doors because all your merchandise is going to be stolen? No one talks about it, because then you would show who the real victims are. The victims in wokeism are the perpetrators of all crimes. The victims deserve it. If you got punched in the face and you're 80 years old, you got your throat slit, you deserve it, because you're a racist or something that the wokeism group and mob. But it gets worse when we look at it up close, when we live within it, when we see it. And that is that those who call themselves, by their own convoluted ethos, anti-fascists, become the most rabid fascists. The anti-racists are the most exemplars of modern racism. Ideological avarice, the avarice either infects or intimidates those who are perhaps the most connected with reality to remain, don't say anything, shut up, stay silent, professor of ethics, because if you say anything about how we're going after one of your professors who's done nothing wrong, but a young group of 18-year-olds feel that that person's word destroyed my life. I now have to go, like Prince Harry, that punk, we have to go and get someone to give us counseling. Where's our teddy bear? Where's that crying room that we all should be in simultaneously, hugging and crying? We woke us. But the professor who did nothing wrong, your job's gone. You're going to get Title IX to death. You won't know your accuser, but you're going to have to hire lawyers to defend yourself. The university will no longer defend you. And that's everywhere. Wasn't it Jonathan Haidt, one of the most respected psychologists, professors in America, who said he no longer uses humor? He no longer has visiting speakers. He no longer shows any film at all. And he watches what he says very carefully for the fear of his job and career that someone be offended. Wow. And so that's where we're at. Those who are wise, those who are humane, those who truly care about all people, the true progressives, are condemned as fools. And of course, social media has now revolutionized the public commons for dialogue and debate, but only one side of dialogue and only one side of debate. Social media has also reinvented how people relate to and interact with each other. So if you're on the side of the power elite, then Facebook, Wikipedia, Twitter, and Google will protect you. And now we know for sure it's not theory, it's absolute unequivocal fact that the government, the White House, members of Congress controlled everything that went on. And if they didn't like you for any reason, you got banned. And then not once you get banned, then Wikipedia will do a character assassination against you. And what's your recourse? You have none. So that's the new liberal commons. And it's enabled the paltry-minded, emotionally fragile voices to rise to influence regardless of any merit or achievements people may have earned during their lifetime. Virtual liberalism, or as one person called it, non-liberalism, has contributed greatly to the proliferation of wokeism's creed. Curiously, wokeism is undoubtedly the product of Western civilization's social consciousness. It is unimaginable that a militant cancel culture could spontaneously arise from more traditional civilizations. So we do not reason any longer. We react at the emotional, visceral, and primal level. You're either with us or you're the enemy. So anything we say, do to you, you deserve. Now, let me tell you why I think this is important. Because over the weekend on Sunday, I conducted a 10-hour and 20-minute webinar. The entire purpose of the webinar was to help millions of Americans who have gotten the vaccine and gotten sick, and yet when they present their symptoms to hospitals and clinics and the original doctor that vaccinated them, they have no answers. We don't believe this is from the vaccine, or if it's from the vaccine, we don't know what the hell to do about it. All right? But there are those who do. Or what about the people that now ended up having these clots? I have a clip that I'm not playing today, but I will play it probably tomorrow, of Anthony Fauci, now that he's retired, stating in one of the most vile interviews, and of course, I only see vile interviews on NBC and ABC and CBS. This is CBS, where someone's saying something to the effect of, there was just a tiny, insignificant, once in a while effect upon the heart, myocarditis, or endocarditis. And Fauci's, yeah, it's insignificant, and it's transient, and it comes back. Well, A, that is factually not true. Go up and look under any medical textbook under myocarditis and see if it's transient. It's not. It's permanent. And he should be disbarred from medicine for what he has done. He should also be held in on crimes against humanity. Now, what did Fauci say from the very beginning? And it was supported by the medical triumphant in Washington, CDC, the FDA, and U.S. Public Health Service. Don't treat a person. If they manifest symptoms of COVID, have them quarantine until they're so sick they end up in the ICU. Then we'll intubate them, though there's no science that really benefits them. And we'll give them remdesivir, one of the most toxic drugs imaginable, which itself kills people. But it's no one's fault. But a group of doctors around the world, unbeknownst to each other, said, hold on a second. I treat people all the time with kidney disease and heart disease and lung disease and different types of viral infections, pneumonia. And we have drugs. We have steroids. We have monoclonal antibodies. We have azithromycin. And we have hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. And a doctor in Italy says, and one in India says, and one in South America and Mexico says, and many in the United States say, by using these, gee whiz, the patient didn't die. In fact, if they presented me within 24 hours, you generally had this under control shortly thereafter, a day or two. And then they began to communicate with each other. And when it became real that they were saving lots of lives that otherwise would be susceptible to hospitalization or even death, depending upon cofactors and their age, they had a press conference. I played it for you. And each and every one of those 12 to 15 people, doctors who didn't know each other, but who all knew that you could save lives by being a doctor with drugs and treatments that had worked on individual cases. Well, they worked together. Every one of them was attacked. The cancel culture went to work on them, and they had boycotts of their offices. The state board came in and went on fishing expeditions to see if there was something they did that they could get them on. And these people withstood a blithering attack against their characters. So we jump forward, and everything they said then, and scientists who were disputing how this was being handled, were correct. They were absolutely right. They've been vindicated, everyone. But what good does it do to be vindicated if the woke culture destroyed your livelihood, destroyed your life? So why did I select the seven people to appear in 10 hours? It was because they had the courage to acknowledge that the establishment was wrong, and they were the establishment. They were the epitome of the establishment. Three of the individuals, doctors I had on, are three of the most cited medical doctors in the world. They're at the top of the pecking order. And they work with the World Health Organization, the FDA and CDC, etc. Professors at major medical schools, sitting on the boards of major scientific journals and medical journals, publishing more articles than any other person in history in their fields. I mean, you don't get it. This is like the who's who of the best and the smartest in history in America. And every single one was destroyed. So listen to what I'm about to say, because this should apply to everything. Have you heard any journalist go back and say to Brett Weinstein and his wife, both tenured professors, what happened to your life after you were thrown out of the university by a cowardly president who apologized to the woke group, even though you had done nothing wrong? You were considered the most liberal professors in the whole school. And the students, your students, loved you. They went to your defense. But these outside agitators come on, and that was it. They were going to close down the university, and the president yielded, and you went. How about the husband and wife, both professors, tenured and highly respected, published, and never a problem in their life, just like the Weinsteins, at Yale? And what about over 1,000 other professors around the United States and Canada in colleges who have been challenged under Title IX for having said something or even implied something that someone in the class said, I think that you just offended something in my belief system, so I'm going to file Title IX. And the insanity of this. And instead of stopping it, more often than not, the schools chose to go for the woke side of the issue. Think of the few people who've been fighting in the public about this, like a very well-known and highly respected professor, tenured professor down at New York University. So look at it this way, a different way. How many lives did those doctors who were cancel cultured, destroyed, how many lives did they save? Thousands, just one, 10,000 lives saved. Four died, but they came 2 weeks after they were infected and were in hospital. But 10,000 that were treated early, all saved. Okay. And then when I asked Dr. McCullough, and I asked Dr. Malone, and I asked Dr. Curry, Pierre Corey, and Dr. Cole, and all these others, and I'm asking him, how many lives did you save? The numbers add up. It's a phenomenal number. So then, in spite of them being hurt, and as they told me privately, I won't mention names of who told me, but these are people who are not rich. And as one of them said, they have no income and they've gone through their savings. And yet they said that they will still be sharing information about what to do if you've been vaccinated and now have side effects, or you're concerned about some of the adverse side effects that can happen later on. Because we haven't begun to see how bad the side effects are. That'll take 2 to 3 years. They're still there to help people for free by giving information. So if we listen to the woke people, none of the people out at the forum should have been there. They all should have been thrown in the ocean someplace like they used to do under Pinochet's government. And they should never be heard of. They're despicable. All right. Think of the millions of people whose lives now may be changed for the better who have vaccine injuries without any help whatsoever. None of them are getting better. And think of all the people who have these lipids growing in their arteries and veins that will kill them. And think about all the people who now are afraid of that myocarditis, which is permanent. It's not ever so slight. It's like one moment you have a little, you know, a little cough and then it's gone. Yeah, you're normal. No, that's what Fauci and others said. It's not true. And the world's leading cardiologists put that right on the record. These are permanent. You're scarring the heart, and that ultimately can lead to your death and will. And so let's say that this information they shared, which is now being edited, we're not posting the 10 and a half hours. We're editing it down to only information. That's all. Nothing about their suffering, nothing about what they happen to have gone through, nothing about their careers. No, nothing about that. 3 board certifications and how rare that is. And yet all their board certifications are being taken away, all political. Because if you take the best and brightest, if you take the smartest men and women on the block, if you take the people that actually know what to do and have done it more than anyone else on the planet, take them out and no one else is going to challenge you. So here's a question for all the woke people out there yelling and screaming because they don't know how to talk. That's all they do is yell and scream and threaten. How many people would die, or how many people would not get better and continue suffering if these people's information was not available to them? Millions. So put it in this perspective. We are at a place of such degeneracy that we're willing to allow millions of lives to suffer and die so that the weaponization of a mind that is immature, intellectually vacuous, to have their moment. Yeah, we destroyed that person. Did you ever meet the person? Did you ever speak to their patients? Did you ever see the patients they cured? No, we don't care. So if they were curing people from the beginning and saving their lives, that didn't matter? No, that doesn't matter. Nothing matters except how we feel, and how we feel is we hate everyone. But today we hate those people, and tomorrow we'll hate someone else. And if you said something 30 years ago, we'll hate you for that, and no matter how many times we ask you to crawl across the street on your hands and knees and beg for our forgiveness, my God, Americans are doing that. Don't apologize to these cretins. Realize that the people who are saving lives are the ones being canceled. What kind of deformity, a perception, occurs in someone's mind that says, let's attack the people who are saving lives, but let's align ourselves with Anthony Fauci. Let's align ourselves with the COVID vaccines and the boosters and the more boosters and the more boosters and more boosters. Let's make that mandatory. Talk about insanity. The entire state of California right now is going through some form of psychic spasm in its legislature to pass laws that if you question as a medical doctor anything about COVID and vaccines, you'll lose your license. Well, we already have a police state then, don't we? Yeah, it's called California. Will anything change? No, nothing can change in California because the people have acquiesced. The professors, everything has been compromised there. So I see people moving en masse who finally wake up and say, wow. Now, I'm going to bring you some short clips. I'm going to bring you a clip tomorrow of a job application that went out from the government in Australia, and they're hiring, I think it's 11 or 12 new positions in aerospace, but it's for women only. No men can apply because it's part of their equity. That's not fair. Well, look at Sweden, because Sweden is probably the fairest country in the world when it comes to opportunity cannot be denied a person for any reason. So no matter what your background, if you want to apply for something, you can, and based upon the merits and the qualifications you bring forward and your abilities, you either get the job or not. So when they tested this, they found out that the men tended to go towards science, the hard sciences, and women tended to go towards professions by their own choice. They could do anything they wanted. But in mass, they went to helping people. They were people-oriented. Doctors, nurses, educators, etc. All noble professions. They weren't mandated to do that. They chose to. So you see, the reality of the world we live in is being perverted by people who have an agenda. And we're not even allowed to have open and honest debates on it. So just remember, if we took all the people who've done right and told the truth and we eliminated them at all, completely, millions of lives will be lost. But that doesn't seem to matter at all to any of the people in the identity politics and woke movement in critical race theory. Wow. I'm Gary Noll. Give us a call if you have something you'd like to say. 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your input. Now, I have a special today for you, something on a very upbeat and positive note, and it works this way. We all need a wide variety of supplements in our body in order to function at a high level of health for our immune system, for hormone balance, for digestion, etc. Now, sometimes people take the short, easy route and they'll take a cheap supplement that has small doses of many of the vitamins, the basic vitamins, none of the superstars. And then other people just select superstars, you know, super nutrients that have a lot of information that they really help. But I decided to do something different. I decided to take the full spectrum of nutrients we should take each day and the superstars and put them all together. As a result, each monthly container has 6 vegan capsules per day. And here's what's in them. 4,000 units of vitamin A from palmitate, but also 6,000 units from beta-carotene. Calcium ascorbate, 500 milligrams. Vitamin D3, 1,000 units. Vitamin E, 200 units. And then I go vitamin K, B1, B6, 25 units of B1, 2, and 6. Folic acid, 800 micrograms. Vitamin B12, 500 micrograms. Biotin, pantothenic acid, calcium, iron, iodine, magnesium. These are from citrate. And then zinc. And selenium. But then I get into the superstars, also copper in there, and manganese, and chromium. But I get in and molybdenum, potassium, choline. But then listen to the superstars. Choline bitartrate, 200 milligrams, and acetyl-L-carnitine, inositol, quercetin, citrus bioflavonoids, bromelain, ginkgo biloba, green tea, phosphatidylserine, N-acetylcysteine, coenzyme Q10, pyrimethamoxazolic acid, L-glutathione, reduced glutathione, pine bark extract, lutein, boron, and melatonin. Yeah, all of those. In my opinion, this is the most comprehensive, all-inclusive, complete once a day that you can take anywhere. All right? And that's the deal. So what's the special today? Simple. You're going to get that wonderful bottle that covers the full spectrum of superstars, super nutrients, as well as all the daily ones you require. Plus, you're going to get the brand new book, Rejuvenate with Juicing. I haven't even distributed yet to the bookstores, but Rejuvenate with Juicing, nearly 300 pages, all brand new, all original material, including why you should juice, what's in the juices, what the juices do when they're in your body, recipes for juices, etc. And something that is needed this time of year more than ever before, the multi-award-winning documentary, Supercharge Your Immune System. So it's good on all levels. So if you care about your health and you want to take a once-a-day supplement, this is it. All right? This covers all the body's basics, plus then the super ones, all in one. Call this number, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or go online at GaryNull.com, the vitamins, and order it yourself. It's ready and it goes right out. Or call Neil in our vitamin closet Monday to Saturday, noon to 8 p.m. Call Neil at 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430. So ask yourself, are you getting all the nutrients that I suggested in the quantities? Because you look at these drugstore-bought vitamins, some of these other vitamins, tiny little potencies. In my opinion, they do not rise to the level of a functional nutrient, meaning functioning positively in the body. Mine do. So we should care about our health. This is one way to do it. Or those that we care about. Put this, have this, just put the capsules, open them up and put them into their smoothie. A lot of times people in their lives are, they're not into taking supplements. They're not into eating right. So it's a little challenging. So I just open it up, put it in. All right. This is the Supreme Health Formula. And what a great package. That's it for today, everyone. Thank you all for listening. And unfortunately, no one called in. So think about what I said then, all right? Have a nice day, everyone.